Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you apply the hope of the gospel of Jesus Christ to everyday life.
All right, welcome back to Abound in Hope. I am Rex Gorman. I'm sitting here with...
I am Tom McGregor.
Hey, I'm Tom Regan.
Yeah, and we're excited to be back here with another episode of our series called Lampstands. Guys, where does lampstands come from? What are we doing?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. Utilizing imagery from Genesis 1.
I didn't see you
the
there.
Book of Exodus, Leviticus, and rip-roaring passages out of Zechariah, John imagines, or sees rather, Jesus walking among the lampstands and reconfigures those lampstands as the church.
Yeah, so he's in Revelation. That's really strange. It's a letter to seven churches, what John says at the beginning of Revelation is that he sees Jesus walking amongst
one
the lampstands.
One like a son of man.
Yeah,
walking among the lampstands, which are the
Revelation
seven churches.
Revelation 1:12-13.
Yeah, and we take that, and I think you can pretty easily take that based on all the things that you just said in a very robotic voice, to mean that when the church gathers, Jesus is here. He's walking with us. And so the whole idea behind this series, we just got through with Word of Their Testimony, talking about what God has done in individual lives. We want to take the time to recognize that Jesus is at work amongst churches, not just Imprint Church, but the church, like the global church, and churches in our area are a part of that. Mm-hmm. And so we've been talking with local pastors, and some close, some far away, that we have some kind of connection with, whether that's through supporting as a church plant or just kind of a close familial connection, ecclesially, that kind of thing. Anything to add to that? Did we nail that? That pretty good?
Boom.
I like it.
All right.
Yeah. And the point's to encourage, like we see the Lord at work in our church and we're so grateful for that, but we need to remember that the Lord is at work in other churches in the area.
Yeah.
Like his bride is the bride, his church.
The church is,
and there's local expressions of that. It's called a local church, and Jesus loves the local church.
Yes, he does.
So we have friends who are pastors. And we want to talk to them about what Jesus is doing in their church.
Yeah. Speaking of friends that are pastors, we have a very special guest with us today. Very special guest. Who are you?
My name is Mark Erickson. I'm a pastor at Bear Creek Community Church, just on the other side of Woodinville.
Great, Mark. It's great to have you here today.
It's good to be here.
Yeah.
Honored to be asked. So good to sit down with you guys.
Yeah.
Thanks for dressing up.
Yeah. Thank you. I spent a lot of time working on this outfit.
Yeah. It's a.
Hope you guys appreciate it.
It is right now as we're recording this. It's July 20th. It's 80 something outside, and so Mark showed up with I think 80 outside.
Yeah,
attire. The rest of us are a little overdressed, but the black jeans, and McGregor's wearing the black jeans and the black jean jacket, and
rocking that man bun to keep his neck cool,
which is pretty amazing. But yeah, Mark, we really are honored to have you here. Let's just get started at kind of the very beginning, man. How did you? Where'd you grow up? Where are you from?
I spent most of my growing up years just outside of Boulder, Colorado.
Oh, really?
That's where I did my junior high and high school years. I moved there technically when I was 9. I was in San Jose, California before that. Mm. But I always feel like Colorado's my roots where I grew up. You know, you kind of tend to figure out who you are in those adolescent years,
totally.
Especially. So I was there in that place. I lived there until I went away to college at 19.
I can tell you call Colorado home because you pronounce it Colorado, which is the way people from Colorado pronounce it.
Dude.
It's a rad place.
You know,
I
was, we were just there last week. My family was. I hadn't been there for like 10 years. So
seriously?
It was
10
awesome.
10 years, wow.
It had been a long time. So it was great. It was really cool.
Yeah. Okay, so you grew up in
yep.
kind of came of age in Colorado and elsewhere as well, it sounds like, but mostly that's kind of where your formative years were.
Yeah, that feels like where I grew up, even though I have memories of California and roots in California still. But growing up there, real involved in church and youth group, and I think that was, pretty typical story for a lot of
people. Was your family, like your immediate family, kind of a Christ-following family, a family that went to church, that kind of thing?
Yep. My parents loved Jesus, loved each other, and I recognized what a blessing that was to be handed to me at a young age, And so that was pretty sweet to be encouraged to know Jesus and to follow him. In fact, just this morning, my mom texted me that today is the 35th anniversary of my baptism.
No way.
Wow. When I was 8 years old.
That's
so
amazing.
So that's kind of cool, you know? Yeah. Like, I wouldn't have known that, but she texted me and I was like, oh, how cool, you know? So they were excited about that.
That's awesome.
Got really involved in, the youth group I was a part of, getting involved in ministry and leadership. A lot of people investing in me, encouraging me to consider potentially, ministry, missions, something like that.
Where did that start? How early did that start, I guess?
That was like seventh grade. Actually,
seventh grade?
Seventh grade was the first time. Well, wow. I think it started like that's where I got really excited about just being a part of a community that felt bigger than myself, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But even as a little kid, I was just really enamored with Jesus. And I had this friend named Paul. This was in California. Paul. And he and I, we used to plan on becoming missionaries someday. And we talked about how we were going to start with the people across the street from me because they were really scary. and so, even from a young age, like I just was so excited about Jesus. And even though I couldn't articulate the gospel very well, you know, I just wanted people to know about Jesus and was so enamored by him. And then when I connected that with being a part of a community, you know, I didn't have many friends in my church and youth group until seventh grade. And all of a sudden there was this place where I belonged and I felt like I was known and accepted and I had something to contribute. And I think that really changed things a lot. And not that all of my high school and teenage years were great. And I wouldn't want to relive them, but I'm really thankful for those moments of community, opportunities to serve and grow and people to pour into me. And so that's kind of where that started. I decided, you know, following high school, our church had this thing called a student intern program where students could apply. One senior could apply to be like kind of on staff at the church. And so I did that. It was like a 5 to 10 hours a week of volunteering and leading middle school ministries and doing different things like that. And people were like, hey, you should consider what's next. And so I decided to go to a little Christian college in Southern California after high school. And I wasn't sure if that was going to be church ministry, missions, or what, but I figured that would be a good place to go.
So what town were you in when you graduated high school?
A little town called Niwot High School, which is just outside of Boulder.
Okay.
So in between Boulder and Longmont, but little town,
Yeah.
Sweet. But where was this internship going to be?
It was there. It was the church I grew up in. Yeah, it was the church I grew up in Colorado. Yes.
All right, so you, post-high school, you've done this thing, you considered this, and you kind of take the plunge into like, all right, well, I think I'm going to be in ministry of some kind. Were there nerves around that? Were you pretty confident going in? Like, I think this is what I'm supposed to do with my life. Or?
I don't know if I have a real sense of calling to like official ministry.
Yeah.
You know, at that point, like I feel like I was able to articulate when I was pursuing ordination and things like that. But it just felt like that's what got my motor running, you know, and where I wanted to just be plugged in. I loved being at church. I loved the story of Jesus. I wanted people to be connected with that. And so I went to get a Bible college education. And so I did that. I only stayed at that school for about a year and a half. I ended up transferring. I met my now wife working at a summer camp.
Oh, cool.
In Santa Cruz, California.
Nice.
Where we were counselors doing ministry together. And I
classic,
totally classic camp romance. She knew me as Snaps, which was my camp name. I was Snaps, and she had a great name. Her name was Bonzo.
All right.
Nice. So, quick story, history drummer. Behind the names. What's Snaps from?
It's just because I thought it was really when I would shake hands with people, I would do this snap thing over their thumb.
So 90s.
And so it was very cool in 1999. You know.
Yeah,
so.
That's right around turn. I remember doing that because my fingers weren't as long as my friends.
Yeah.
And so they would be like, I was like the competition.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Was she just a giant Led Zeppelin fan or?
No, hers was a terrible nickname assignment. But she was tired one night and just said, "Oh, it's bedtime for Bonzo." And someone pointed to her and said, "That's your name." And so that stuck. And so now you can still go.
Never so regretted off the comments. Yeah,
totally, totally. She regrets that one. But you can still see to this day, back in 1999 and 2000, carved into what's called the wagon wheel, where we would have lunch and meals at this camp. So Snaps plus Bonzo. You know, 99 and 2000.
Forever.
Nice.
Forever. It's still there to this day. You can see it. Dang. And we have our real initials next to our camp names. Yeah. So, cool. But that brought me back up to the Pacific Northwest. She was up here.
You were moving up here. Yep.
I moved up here chasing her. I finished at Seattle Pacific University my last 2 years.
Yeah.
What were some of like the formative experiences in your education that prepared you for ministry or the ministry that you ended up in?
Well, actually, believe it or not, working at camp was pretty formative, being a part of that community. Yeah. That was a lot of fun, really hard, but really sweet. But I think coming to Seattle, we lived in Ballard. We had just gotten married. I was still in school, and I started interning at Bethany Community Church in Green Lake, and just really loved that. The lead pastor at the time, who's still technically there, Richard Dahlstrom, I got to spend a lot of time. He invested in me and a couple other interns, and I got to preach for the very first time there.
Oh, that's cool.
On a Sunday. Like they had like four services. You know, I'd never preached before. Richard is an incredible communicator, and I was invited to preach on a Sunday. So I preached four times for 40 minutes. Sweet. First time ever, you know, like at 22 years old. But that was a really powerful experience. And also throughout the last years of high school, and while I was in that transitionary period in high school, there was a guy who's a former missionary in Brazil that worked at our church in Colorado named Chris. And he mentored me. We spent a lot of time. He shaped me, prayed with me, walked through things. I actually got to have coffee with him last week in Colorado, and I hadn't seen him for forever. But Man. But that was another one of those relationships at that time in my life that I'm still seeing fruit from. You know, that was really sweet. So
that's awesome.
That was cool. Yeah.
So you, I guess Bible college didn't make you rethink your decision to go into ministry or anything like that. It kind of helped. And it sounds like the practical experiences in the community around that were super formative as well, right?
Yeah. I for sure. Like, really glad to be plugged in. You know, one of the things that Chris told me and other people was that if you're doing a theological education, you're interested in ministry, don't do it in a vacuum.
Yeah, and so, totally.
You know, like, in fact, when I was at the school in California, worked with a church plant to start the youth ministry there just at like 19. A friend of mine and I started that. We did that for a year and a half before I moved up this way. And so just finding ways to be actually involved in ministry all throughout that while I'm in the classroom was really helpful and good. And you know, and you experience some of the messiness of it.
Yeah. So it's not Christianity in a lab. You know, it's not church in a lab.
Yeah, it's not a vacuum.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great way to put it. I remember that and some of my stuff talking about these things while being on staff at a church before doing any kind of theological training.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about, like, well, this is way messier in real life than what they're saying, that kind of thing. Did you feel any of that tension, or was it just sort of
just a little bit? I think I was mostly protected from it.
Okay.
Through a lot of that. I mean, you see a little bit of that. You hear the stories you experience some of that. But I do remember, like, because I finished college, I was going to stay in Seattle, but ended up, there was a paperwork mistake with my seminary application that put me in the running for a scholarship if I went down to Fuller's campus in Pasadena.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, I went and I got my MDiv and did ministry there for 3 years. And youth pastor at a church there in San Gabriel, California for 3 years. That was a 20-hour week deal, you know, while I was getting my MDiv. And that was really sweet. That was good. And then, I mean, I remember coming up to Bear Creek where I'm at right now. I've been here for next week. I start my 18th year.
Wow. Whoa, no way.
On staff at
Bear
Creek.
That's amazing.
Which is crazy to think about. So 2005 is when we came up. In the middle of that. But I remember even coming into that, like, just really, maybe not oblivious, but expecting that ministry was just going to be awesome.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And it's just going to be amazing. People.
You had been in Pasadena for 3 years, and, you know, there's a lot of sunshine. You looked around at Pasadena, you said, there's too much sunshine here. I got to go somewhere else.
A lot of sun, a lot of heat, a lot of brown air,
That's true.
And that was a pretty sweet place to be for a while, you know, doing seminary, like on the fast track through my MDiv program, but also doing ministry, working at a church plant down there that, actually, if you guys have ever seen the movie Father of the Bride, if you remember where they filmed the movie, there's a church where they put like snow on the church where they did the wedding. That was the church we worked at. This building was this old Lutheran church that closed their doors, and they gave the building and a pile of money to another church to plant a church. And I got to be a part of that church plant while in seminary.
That's cool.
Wait, are they still around? I'm just kidding.
What?
That church.
The Lutheran church?
I'm just looking for a church who would give us a church.
A building?
Yeah. Imprint Pasadena.
Do they have any connections?
Yeah.
So were you part of a Lutheran denomination?
No, not at all. It wasn't a Lutheran church. It was a non-denominational church. That was plugged in.
All right, so you make your way back up here to Bear Creek, where you've been the entire time. Where were you coming up to Bear Creek to do? Was it to be pastor? Was it to be youth pastor?
And wait, did I miss it? How was the connection? What was the connection to Bear Creek? Did you?
Well, we were in Pasadena. I was finishing up school. My wife was a teacher, a high school teacher, biology teacher at the time, working in Glendora, California. And I was only half time. We got pregnant with Eli, who's 17 mm-hmm. right now. Mm-hmm. And we were wanting to do full-time ministry somewhere, and we were hoping and praying that we could come back to the Pacific Northwest if possible. And so I started putting out applications, and one of the churches I talked with was Bear Creek, who had a job posting for a youth pastor. Mm. And so I interviewed with them same time I was going through ordination with my home church, but got hired by Bear Creek in 2005. And in fact, it was June. I started in August of that year, but in June of 2005, my wife and I both finished our master's programs at the same time. Hers in teaching and learning, my MDiv. So on Thursday, we both turned in our final papers, submitted them. On Friday, our son was born via C-section. On Saturday, I left the hospital to go walk in my graduation. And on Sunday, while still in the hospital, we got the call from Bear Creek. I had candidated the week before.
It's an eventful weekend for you guys.
It was totally eventful. Yeah. Like, I'd been a full-time student for like 20 years, and all of a sudden I was offered a full-time ministry position. And so we came up here that summer, and I was youth pastor for 15 years, became the teaching pastor in 2018.
Wow.
And I was still the youth pastor still for two. So I was youth pastor and teaching pastor for 2 years. And then became the lead pastor in 2020.
Wow.
January 2020.
Man.
That's intense, man.
Perfect time to take over leadership.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Super. You talk about going and thinking about how sweet ministry is going to be.
Like, I was actually going to come.
Here's a runaway train coming at you.
I was going to come right back to that because you said, you know, you guys went in and you were a little starry-eyed. Like, this is just going to be great. This is going to be awesome. You said that in such a way, like, it's been hard.
But there's
like to hint is that it's been hard in some ways.
Yeah, there's been moments. I mean, I think anyone in ministry has scars of some sort. Anyone who loves anyone has scars, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, right. So that's just part of life. I don't want to pile on like pastors have it rough.
Course,
everybody does. Anyone, you know, that's just life. But I remember that first year coming in, and there was a scandal, an abuse scandal with the leadership at the church, and it just kind of blew up. I ended up being the only full-time 40-hour-a-week pastor there for almost 2 years.
Oh, my gosh.
And we had an interim that came in. But
how soon after that was when you got hired? Was
just
that?
6 months of when I showed up.
Oh, my gosh. So, like, you got hired by a leadership team, and then they all disappeared.
Our lead pastor was gone at that point. And so the senior pastor. And so that was really messy and hard, and some of the stories you hear about. And then it's not always just the event of something like that that's hard, but the fallout and the relationships and the brokenness and the politicking and the power grabs and just the... Sometimes it's human beings. I mean, we can lose sight of the gospel so easily.
Oh yeah.
You know, and especially when there's hurt and trust issues there. So that was really tough, you know, that was early 2006 when all that happened. And so that was kind of a big eye-opening moment.
This young dad who's green in ministry, right?
Totally.
What did that do to your view of ministry? Did you have like a moment where you're like, wait, do I actually want to do this? Or was it just kind of like I guess this is going to be harder than I thought?
I think probably more of the latter on that one.
Yeah.
Like it's just kind of like, oh, we knew this was going to be this way. You know, I felt pretty supported by our elder board at the time and by we're part of the tribe that Convert what's called Converge now.
Yeah,
we got some good help from some friendship there and other churches. It was actually a few years later that I think a lot of it came to a head that the lead pastor we brought in, who's a dear, dear friend, loves Jesus like crazy, super, one of the wisest people I know, Mike San Martino. Mm. There was just some really almost like a coup against him, you know, in the church.
Oh, no.
And that actually think was more painful for me than the scandal from before, because it was people like in the name of Jesus kind of hurting each other. And, I think a lot of like, you know,
you also knew the people and you loved the people.
Love the people.
More.
Yeah. And so walking through that was tough. Like, and so some of those things were a little bit, I don't know. They're kind of those moments where you kind of fantasize about doing something else every now and then, you know, but like a lot of good stuff happened in the midst of that, but it was really painful and difficult and it was hard to process because you just don't know. I mean, you hear the stories, but you don't know how to go through those things.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So from those two, like both of those are pretty intense formative experiences. What are some of the pastoral or leadership lessons, or even just discipleship lessons that God taught you out of those two experiences?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I'm still having God teach me is that there's something about learning to have, you know, a soft heart and thick skin. Mm-hmm. And I think most, like, my default mechanism, if someone criticizes me or there's difficulty, is to get a hard heart and soft skin. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'm easily offended and hard hearted, and that's how I protect myself. But I think, like, the way of Jesus is really made of having thick skin, where you can brush off criticism and things that, you know, there's more behind the scenes that's really happening there, but still having a heart of compassion and being able to love people and see people as people and not as the person who's hurting you or causing problems or just finding the mistakes that I've made or, you know, those types of things. And so I think that's part of it is learning. Like, I think all of us as leaders need to learn what that looks like. But I think also in the midst of that, it's like what this podcast is about, right? Like, that Jesus walks amongst the lampstands, that there's faithfulness in the midst of all of it. And looking back, especially now, you can see that God was working in the lives of people, drawing people to himself. Like, the gospel doesn't stop moving.
Yeah.
Even, you know, Philip Yancey says you can't blame an idea for the people that claim to represent it.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
Know? And I misrepresent it all the time. And so recognizing that God works through broken people all throughout things was part of that. Mm-hmm. Like, and none of us have it all together, right? Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I was just thinking as you said that thing, you know, that's pointed back at me, not just during like a scandalous time, but like in the various, you know, stray things, or even just meaning well, where we accidentally misrepresent the gospel. Jesus is still at work and around us, which is pretty cool.
That's amazing grace, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
What about for the Bear Creek community? Have either of those experiences shaped the community as it is now because those same people for the most part are there? Or is it kind of a forgotten past for the majority? Like, how have they formed your current iteration?
Yeah, I think for some people, you don't forget those things. A lot of people have still been there the whole 17 years that I've been there. A lot of them have, you know, there's a lot of turnover and with both of those things, you know, you have people coming and going at different times. And, I think you always are impacted by things you experience. But there's really like we describe ourselves as a loving church family, caring for people as we journey toward Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so it's simply that, like, okay, well, we're walking through life. This is where God has placed us. We're this little expression of God's community. How can we love each other as we journey toward Jesus? And so that's what I think we have people that recognize. We come from all these different backgrounds, have had these experiences, but ultimately what we desire is to have our feet pointed toward Jesus together.
Yeah. And did those experiences shape that vision?
Or was that there ahead of time, I guess?
No, I think that vision has developed over the years. Mm-hmm. And I think that those experiences were significant, but I don't think they were the most formative things for us as a people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, like, I think in the time when you're in crisis, that's all you can think about.
Yeah, of course.
That's all you feel. But there's, when you step back and you see more of what's happening, I think that's just kind of what we've pursued of being a people that are feet pointed toward Jesus. That's what we want to be wherever we're at. We want to help other people have their feet pointed toward Jesus.
That's awesome.
So,
you said you were youth pastor there for the first 15 years.
Yep.
You were there. That's a long tenure for a youth pastor. Is that something you kind of felt was your calling for a while? Like you thought, I'm just going to be a youth pastor, or was it something that was like, well, I'm here, I'm just going to be faithful?
Did you feel
a kind of specific calling towards youth
pastor? Yeah. You know, eventually.
I was interested in being a lead pastor or preaching, you know, and doing a lot of those things. And I got a lot of opportunities to do those things. So it's hard to tell. Like, I never felt like I am called to be a youth pastor. Never felt like that. But coming out of seminary at 25 years old, those were the main opportunities. I could only play three chords on the guitar, so that kept me limited.
Man. Maybe you know, four if you got to throw the minor in there.
The minor in there, yeah.
That's true.
But that's what the doors were open to, and I loved ministry in there. That's where God got a hold of me. And so I did that for a long time, but I did talk with other churches about ministry opportunities. Yeah, some of those I stepped out of, some of those they said, no, thank you. I went through church planning assessment back in like 2012, 2013 or so, and went through that with our conference And I really thought my wife and I were, Katie and I were praying a lot about feeling like, well, this could be it. Maybe it's to plant a church. That was a big movement within Converge. And a lot of people were encouraging me to do that. They're looking for church planters. And so went through assessment and did all that. In fact, we came close back in like 2013, 14, 15, vision for what we were going to call Corridor Church, which was going to be the name came from my wife came up with it in Totem Lake where they're building the Cross Kirkland Corridor.
Yeah.
And so Corridor, the idea that like God is moving through the city, moving through the world, moving through history, and we want to join our story to his story and invite as many people as possible to join his story. So there was a vision for that, you know, working through that whole process. And we're approved for planting with some conditions. One of those was to meet with another planting couple. So my wife and I got together with the Larsons actually, you know, early on. And so we thought that might be something we were going to do. But Bear Creek's a small church. So we couldn't plant the typical model of
like,
launching
let's take
off
some people here,
hiving people off or that kind of thing. And so we weren't really sure. And to be honest with you, like my heart wrestled with it sometimes. And though I love the idea of Corridor Church, especially, and had people that we started a group of people that could potentially be a part of that, I never was convinced like this is God's calling on our lives. Mm. It felt I wasn't sure if I was pursuing it out of like, well, this is what's expected of you because there's people moving this direction. And to be honest, I'm not your typical church planting pastor kind of guy. Like,
how so?
I just, a lot of the planting pastors I know are just like guns blazing,
really
like going to take the hill.
Yeah.
They're good at a lot of different things and they're just like, just can go all out and do amazing things, you know, for the gospel and just super gifted evangelists. And I admired those people, but I never felt like I was that, you know, and when I went through assessment, I was working on my DMin at the time. And
the audience, doctor of
ministry. Not my demon. I'm working on my demons.
Yeah.
A doctor of ministry. And my dissertation was on intergenerational worship, the biblical, theological, and practical reasons for...
I would love to read that, by the way. So.
It's not very good.
Okay.
But yeah. So a big part of my vision for ministry was intergenerational, people of all generations coming together around worship. And when I went to church planning assessment and I gave my model vision for church planning, they were like, this isn't going to work. Or one of the people were like, you need to have a target demographic.
Lame.
You need to have a niche, and do something that's going to draw. And I just didn't. And that wasn't everybody in the church planting movement. That was one particular piece of feedback I got. But I think I've heard Tom, you talk about this before, that like when people are talking to you about church planting, you didn't want to do something new. People are like, what innovative thing are you going to do? And you're like, no, I want to do something old.
Yeah, something old and proven.
Yeah,
that's like got more to do with corporate America than
it
the
really
movement
does.
Of Jesus
totally.
Christ.
Grow.
Yeah.
Bogus.
And so I just didn't get...
My grandma's over here fuming.
Oh, man, I can't believe it. Yeah.
So,
surprised me.
So that part of that experience made me just wonder, like, I don't know if this is right for me. Maybe it's better for me just to stay where I'm at, care for students or this church or find a church
whoever
that
comes along,
wants to help, wants a person to... help people point their feet toward Jesus.
A pastor,
right?
Yeah. How about a pastor?
I'm a little more Eugene Peterson, right? Than like, than some of the stuff I was feeling at some of the conferences
like
I was
going
to.
Sorry, no bias here.
I love Eugene Peterson.
And so we kind of hit the brakes on Corridor because there wasn't a way for us to plant that was not going to hurt Bear Creek.
Yeah.
And we don't want to kill mother and baby, you know, at the same time.
Yeah.
And so I started... church planter residency. The elders at our church gave me time to go once a month to a church in Bothell that was a sister church of ours. And I preached once a month and I sat with our elders and just learned things and just involved just for a year. And so I did that for a while. Their lead pastor left to become a missionary. He went to Eastern Europe and we considered that role. They asked me to apply for that. We thought about that. And then at that time, Mike, our senior pastor, just came and said, hey, I think God is calling us to a new kind of ministry. And so he went to get his degree in marriage and family therapy. He's really, really good.
And by the way, we have referred a whole boatload of people
from our
Imprint
list.
Church to him.
He's awesome. He loves people, super wise. Mm-hmm. And he was committed to ending well at Bear Creek. We'd never had a good pastoral transition ever at our church.
Man.
And he was like, I want that to be our legacy. So
good.
He asked me to think about applying to become the teaching pastor while he was still the lead pastor going through school. So I started preaching, doing all the preaching or most of it in 2018 and working towards a transition where he left in 2020.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. So like a full 2 years ish, you know, for that transition. That's awesome.
And so that really felt like that was more of where God was calling us to be. And so that's kind of how that all happened. Still believe in church planting. I still think it's important. I think it's the way, it seems to be a big way that God is drawing people to himself. And so, but I don't know if planting a church is going to be in our future ever, you know, like we wondered at some point.
Yeah, it seems like there's some key themes in your ministry from, you know, before teenage years up to the present. Are you conscious of those themes? Can you look back and be like, these are the things that God's called me and my wife to do and to be in the local church? Or am I just like reading into that?
No, I think there's certain things that probably people that hear me preach will say that come in a lot that we've have as part of our culture and our values. I think like just the whole notion of being good news people, you know, evangelicals is such a loaded word, but it's such a great word when you think about it, you know? And in fact, last week I was telling you guys before we started, I spent a week in like prayer and study and spent a whole afternoon just praying for our church, Romans 15:13, you know, I pray that the God of hope will fill you with joy and peace as you trust in him so that you can overflow in hope or bound in hope, which I realize
that seems familiar.
That's the name of your podcast. So, but like thinking about becoming people that are filled by Jesus with joy and peace and abounding in hope, you know?
Yeah.
And I think like the whole story of the gospel that God loves people and is drawing people to himself. And, you know, N.T. Wright talks about this a lot, that like God's plan of salvation is not an evacuation plan, like pulling people out of earth and getting them into heaven. Like we so focus on that, but really it's a restoration plan where we live in a world where all of creation is groaning for a redeemer. Mm-hmm. And that's obvious around us everywhere you look.
Yeah.
And that God calls people and puts his spirit in them to be the first fruits of that redemption. And we get to be a part of that.
Yeah.
Like that's really good news. And so I literally
preached on that on Sunday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'll have to listen.
I use the same words, first fruits of the new creation.
Yeah. That's a
full restoration.
That's who we are.
Good news.
Yeah.
Like
that's good news.
That's amazing. That's worth everything, right? And I think it can be so easy to get overwhelmed by like the culture wars of the Christian faith and so many different things that can distract us. But dude, we have really good news about what God is doing and what he will do. And we get to participate in it. And so that's ultimately what I hope our church is about. Mm. I heard a guy say something a few months ago. A guy named Kevin Hollinger. I don't even know if he knows who I am, but he's a pastor in our conference.
Yeah.
He was talking about the draw for us to feel like we need to be successful, you know, and effective as pastors and really make a difference. And he said the most freeing thing in his life was when God reminded him, don't be successful, just seek to be a blessing, you know, and to find a way to be a part of seeking the flourishing and the shalom of where we live and those who are around us. And I think that's really a freeing and beautiful way to think about living in the world.
Totally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. As I think, I mean, when success is thrown around in those terms of like pastorally, it generally has to do with numbers or programs or
platforms
or whatever. So that sounds like a better definition of success is.
Yeah. And if that's that, I'm not a successful pastor. If that's, if those are the terms,
very
honestly,
few real pastors are, if that's the metric.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys, you started the succession process in 2018.
Yeah.
And you said it handed off in 2020. Something else happened in 2020. I don't remember what exactly.
Yeah. You have like the worst memory, right?
Yeah,
because he says that all the time.
I say that all the time. Every time I'm up on stage and I'm like, I don't know if you guys are news junkies, but something happened in 2020. Anyway.
Everything happened in 2020.
Yeah. What was it? I know this is a huge question and it's on purpose, so you can just go wherever, but what was it like stepping into a pastoral role and then the world as we know it sort of changing? Was it sort of similar to when you kind of came up as the youth pastor and be like, this is gonna be great, and then
it was similar to that. I think it was similar, although I think I was a little more clear-eyed on what was gonna happen. But then when everything happened, like all the weight of those decisions, like I think that's what I didn't expect, wasn't ready for coming into a lead pastor role, is just the weight of some of those things. And so there was decisions being made all the time that were really hard. And
that was the year of decisions too. It was like the year of everything. You have to make a decision when there's not like a clear answer. You know?
Yeah. And so, and everybody had a strong opinion, you know, and it was messy and it was hard. Had a lot of people leave, you know, at different times for various reasons, whether it was pandemic, a reaction to that, you know, George Floyd and the fallout from that and conversations about racial justice and then the election. There's a lot of those things. I mean, we all know how much there was, you know, added to the pressure cooker that year.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was really challenging and exhausting.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we're still feeling it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What did that do to you? Did you feel like a deep sense of calling in there within that hard time? I mean, you'd had like a long runway of like, all right, I know I'm going to be the pastor here. And again, you knew the people, you loved the people. Did that kind of make you lean further into your calling, or was there a moment where you were like, man, this is just really hard. Maybe I'll go work at Starbucks. Or...
Yep. Everything you just said.
Both of them. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think it was kind of cyclical, right? Like there's moments where you're like, man, this is why, you know, the church has existed through difficult moments before. The gospel is simple enough, like what it means to be, you know, people of Jesus right now. And you get really excited and you see really good things happen. And then other moments that were just like, oh
man,
I don't want to get out of bed or I don't want to do this. Or...
Darren always said that he could tell how he was feeling in ministry based on whose job he looked at in envy.
Oh,
and he said one time he looked at like the guy selling e-cigarettes and the kiosk in the back and was like, man, I want his job so bad. I was like, oh, that was a low moment for you. Anyway.
Yeah. No, so there's ups and downs throughout that. But yeah, so it's pretty cyclical up and down here and there. So,
yeah.
So what would you say are like what are the big truths, revelations, I'll say to your soul, like about being a pastor and being in ministry over the last couple of years, like that sort of like that God maybe crystallized for you in the last couple of years?
I think, something about having, an appropriate view of who we are in the world, like that we are called by God, placed by God in a certain place, given the message of the gospel. But I think it comes down to that, like stop trying to be successful and be a blessing thing comes back to me over and over again.
Yeah.
And this concept of like that God is restoring all of creation. Like it's not an evacuation plan. Like we're a part of that right now. And that's the message that we hold out, even though we're going to get it wrong. And even though there's so many things, like, and even the last couple of years, I mean, I so many do-overs I wish I could have even in ministry and life. Like, but I think there's something about just the beauty of that. And Philip Yancey, I remember him telling this story about growing up in rural Colorado where they're at. And I hope I get the story right, but hang with me because it's a cool.
Philip
one.
Is a longtime listener of our podcast.
Okay, Philip, no. Thank you.
I hope we get this right.
Big fan, Philip.
Hey, Phil. All right.
But he talks about outside of their little town in rural Colorado, his wife and I go to the middle school concerts where they have a middle school orchestra program.
Oh, yeah.
And like, it's this little school. And there's a really ambitious and zealous middle school orchestra director who teaches the kids to play Mozart and to do all these really complicated pieces of music. And you know how, if you've ever been to a middle school orchestra concert,
Indeed.
My daughter's a middle school orchestra student. It's
it's something.
No offense.
It's unique, you know?
Yeah, it's painful.
But he teaches them, he teaches these kids these complicated stuff. And when you hear Mozart played by seventh graders, you don't blame Mozart. You know?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
But at the same time, if these seventh graders, aren't playing Mozart, there's a good chance that nobody in this little community in Colorado ever hear Mozart, right?
Yeah. Oh, man, that's good.
And most of the time, it doesn't sound great. It sounds like a middle school. But every now and then, they hit the right notes.
Yeah.
And there's something really beautiful there. And so in all of the mess of what it means to be a human being and to live in the country we live in right now and all of the things that can distract us and mess us up and stories of failure or feeling like we're not enough and being sure that we're not enough, like if we can just hold out as best we can the message of the gospel, like if we can hit the right notes every now and then, totally worth it, you know?
Absolutely.
And it could be that, you know, God uses crooked sticks to draw straight lines all the time, right?
Yeah.
And so it,
almost exclusively, actually.
Yeah. Right, totally. And I think that's what it means to be jars of clay, you know, containing this great treasure. And so that, I think, for us as a church, for me as a person, that's what I get excited about. And when I find those moments where I'm like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore, or, you know, what other jobs are there, or that kind of thing, it's like, dude, we get to hold out. We get to play Mozart.
Yeah.
For the world. And we're going to get it wrong a lot of the time, but God's grace is really big,
man.
And every now and then we hit the right notes. And so I love that story he tells. And
that's
an awesome illustration. Memorable. Let me give you a chance to brag on Bear Creek a little bit. I know, like you said, it's been a tough couple years. What are some things you can look at and celebrate, and like, you know, to use the metaphor, what are some times you've played the right notes? What are some times that you've seen like beauty come through?
When have you just crushed it as a pastor?
No, I'm just kidding. No. What are those things that you can
brag
look
on
at?
God? Brag on what is God?
What are those things you can look at in those moments? Like, is this the right thing where God brings to mind?
Yeah,
like, man, no, this is something we're celebrating.
I think like the people in our church know how to love each other well. And I think that's just really beautiful. And so like, community is in our name, and I feel like our people really live that out well. Mm-hmm. Love people well, serve people well, really involved in a lot of ministries to the homeless and to the poor and in the area, to different things that they're involved with, but then just really love each other well. And we're a small church. Like we're small, less than 100 on most Sundays. Mm-hmm. And in the last 6 months, for some reason, we've had just like a rash of sudden loss of life within the church. People in the church, people very close, you know, parents, siblings, kids, like, and a lot of heartache, you know, with that, within our little congregation. And people have loved each other well through that and continued serving. And people are generous, and they care about each other, and they play the right notes, I think, frequently. And so I really love that about our little church, how they welcome people when they show up, how they encourage each other, how they pray for each other, how they are generous toward each other. And that's really, really sweet and encouraging to me. So that jumps to the surface for me for sure, that people love each other well.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And I love that. Yeah.
Well, according to Jesus, that is playing it pretty well. Like that's playing. Yeah. That's the testimony to the world. Right?
By this shall all men know that you are my disciples. That you have love for one another.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think people experience that. You
it's
know,
commending. So. It's commending the gospel. Loving one another is not the proclamation of the gospel, but it commends and supports the proclamation of the gospel.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It validates it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's incredible. Well, man, one thing we have done on this podcast is we ask our people, because you know when Philip is done listening to this, basically that's what we want him to do. We've been asking the guests how we can pray for them and their family and then their churches as well. Is there anything that we can pray for to use my southern terms, y'all, about? What can we do? What are you praying for your church? How can we join you? And then how can we pray for you and your family specifically?
Yeah. I love the term y'all, by the way.
Yeah, it's effective.
It's better than use guys. It also would change the way we read the Bible.
Absolutely.
It's all y'all.
It is. It's all
y'all.
Yeah,
it's all y'all. So thanks for asking that. That's a great question. And we, of course, covet prayer all the time. Mm-hmm. I think like from a simple practical thing is like I said, we've had just a lot of hurt and loss within the church over the last few months. And when you know people and love people and you see them hurting, that hurts everybody. And I think that's right. But I mean, that's why I was praying Romans 15:13 for our church, is to be people that are filled with peace and joy as we trust in Jesus, to overflow or abound in hope, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think like That's my prayer for us amidst all the hurt, you know, that we have with different things, is that we would be that type of people. And I think too, like, we just really want to be a faithful congregation of people that come from all different backgrounds, and we have a wide range of types of personalities and values and passions within the church. And sometimes that gets really messy, but I really do think that if we have feet pointed toward Jesus, all of us, then there's something that really beautiful can take place there. And so you can pray, I think that, yeah, that we would be people that are filled with peace and joy, abounding in hope. And then that we'd be really a faithful expression of, you know, we're just a little tiny sliver of God's global kingdom and family. And we just want to do our part well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Love each other well, be faithful. Faithfulness is better than success, and flashiness. And, I think I need that reminder often too, but I think that those are some ways we always love and covet prayer.
Yeah. Yeah. What about the Ericksons? What about Mark Erickson? How can we pray for you and for your family? Like, in that, and I know, well, obviously we'll pray for your congregation, but as you lead people that you want to be unified around overflowing in hope, how can we pray for you guys?
I think something's very similar, you know. I want to be a person of hope and not just be able to say the words and be a professional Christian and talk like one, but like be someone that's really legitimate for. And there's moments of discouragement and challenge in ministry, like everybody would have. I think praying that I could follow Jesus in that and be that kind of person. And, you know, I've got three teenagers in the house now, so it's a whole different type of way you pray for your kids and care for them. And it's really, really fun. But it's just different, and, it's got its own set of challenges. And so, you know, life and family and those things are full sometimes, but great, you know, so.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Absolutely. Well, Mark, seriously, thanks for sharing with us. This has been really encouraging. I appreciate your faithfulness. Like that's super cool, where a lot of people do jump around a little bit, and God calls people all over the place, but it's just super amazing to hear about people who do that long, faithful obedience in the same direction, to go back to Eugene Peterson.
It's cool. And you get like, I mean, as a youth pastor, I've had kids that have come up as seventh graders.
Yeah.
I got to go and take them on mission trips and stuff like that in camps. I married them to each other, and then I've dedicated their children.
That's so rad.
Like, and so they,
man, yeah, you know, like cool. the contours of their lives super well.
Oh, totally. It's super cool. Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, that's amazing. Anything else you want our people to know about for Bear Creek, for you, anything like that?
No, but thank you for being here, Imprint. Yeah, thanks for being a faithful representation of Jesus. And I love this church. I got to preach here once, actually. Back like 7 or 8 years ago, a long time, just in the first year or two, but
that's awesome.
I'm proud to call you brothers in Christ. So, and sisters in Christ. So thanks for what you're doing here in Woodinville. And it's cool to see God working in different ways. So keep on keeping on.
And just a reminder to folks who are listening is literally when you turn this off, just say a prayer for Bear Creek and say a prayer for Mark and his family.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, guys, we will see you next week with another story of God's faithfulness through the church. See you soon.
Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, you can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org.